frighten us by telling us the facts, 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 the facts. We must be the great arsenal of democracy. For us, this is an emergency as serious as war itself. We must apply ourselves to our task with the same resolution, the same sense of urgency, the same spirit of patriotism and sacrifice as we would show were we at war.
For 91.3 FM, WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded on January 20th, 2019, and produced by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, Nate and Rachel joined me to discuss the LA teacher strike, as well as the recent massive strikes in India. That's all coming up on Arsenal for Democracy. Episodes are available for download on Tuesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes or Stitcher. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it simultaneously from WVUD.org on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me on the line in Massachusetts is Nate. Hi, Nate. Welcome back.
Hey, Bill.
And joining me on the line in Idaho is Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Nate.
This week we wanted to talk about the LA teacher strike primarily. I don't know who's taking the lead on this one, but there's been a big teacher strike, and it seemed like it was important to discuss it, especially in the context of following up on some of these ones that we've been talking about in the past year, you know, in places like West Virginia. Who wants to take point on this?
I guess I'll just should just start off by mentioning that I think the comparison to the teacher strikes in that we saw recently in West Virginia and Oklahoma and other places, it makes sense because I think the funding levels for a lot of these schools in LA are at a similar level as these red states. And we talked a little bit about that before the show.
Rachel, where do we need to start on this specific strike?
So it's been a week now since the beginning of the strike. And so far, I think in the wake of those other strikes, the public response seems to be very favorable. Members of the public have identified strongly with teachers and their descriptions of overcrowding in classrooms and schools without nurses and librarians and other support staff on hand. And I think the public unions, the teacher unions, have been really good about talking about where public schools are at in opposition or in relation to charter schools, which have become very popular in recent decades. In the LA area, charter schools enroll about 1 in 5 students and are popular with many families, but they do take public monies and then they are privately administrated. So they are taking the student funding because funding occurs on a attendance-based basis. And so if students disenroll from public schools and enroll in charter schools, that funding goes with them, which leaves the public schools in a bind and kind of creates the conditions where we are today, where students are in overcrowded classrooms and just don't have the resources they need to succeed. So the United Teachers Los Angeles Union has talked about how they want a moratorium on new charter schools. They want a 6% salary increase. They want smaller class sizes. They want a nurse on hand in all schools. And they want to provide the funding for the support staff, the paraprofessionals, the librarians, counselors, and what have you. Just having as many people available to support the kids as possible.
Nate?
Yeah, and so currently it seems like today they're still behind closed doors negotiating, and you know, it's too early to tell whether, you know, there's going to be a breakthrough or anything like that. But apparently there was a 10-hour session on Friday that said was productive, and they got back at it today, Sunday. So it seems like things are stretching on. The president of the United Teachers LA said that their sort of resilience in the first 5 days had stunned their naysayers. If you are a boxer, you know what to do with a stunned opponent, he said. You double down and keep punching. So basically, it seems like the teachers are gearing up. Do you have to be prepared if necessary to maintain strong picket lines throughout the coming week? But they're still trying to get a deal, it sounds like. And yeah, it's quite interesting. Also about the class sizes issue. It seems like we have stories sort of teachers talking about how the kids had like seen their classes doubled. The kids started talking about their class size and how they had more than double the class I had that day, and they do it without movies. So it's, you know, you're seeing people sort of sharing their experiences, and the class size issue is something that there was an article about in NPR that Rachel and I read and were kind of baffled by, because it seems like there was a lot of concern about, oh, this will cost too much to reduce class sizes, and then we can't spend it on other things, and that's a problem. And it's like, there's currently some classes are as large as 46 kids, and that doesn't quite seem like the optimal size.
I mean, so, what are you supposed to be spending the money on at that point if not reducing those class sizes?
Right. Well, I mean, one person said, I think someone from the Urban Institute is like, well, if you had an extra $1,000 to spend, it's not clear that you would definitely want to spend it on smaller classes versus paying your teachers more, providing for more money for textbooks, for a music program, or after school activities. And I'm not really sure why we're trying to choose between those options, but yeah, they claim it would cost $130 million to reduce some class sizes by only a few students. And yeah, it just doesn't seem like they're in a great situation right now.
Well, as we all know, there's no wealth in Los Angeles. So
yeah, definitely not.
Real mystery.
There's no money in Hollywood.
How you could pay for that. Yeah. But I guess you wanted to talk, or one of you wanted to talk about some of the funding issues and how a lot of this has to do with the California Proposition 13 from 1978.
Right. There is a really excellent article on The Nation by Sarah Jaffe, and she really goes into some of the issues that have really led to this moment. Proposition 13 makes it so property taxes are capped at 1% of the property's assessed value. This has been in place since 1978. So we're in a real estate boom right now, where property values have just, like, they're astronomical. And a lot of that is happening in California. But if you can only tax it at 1%, which is such a tiny, tiny amount, the schools are definitely not getting funded the way they should be. And despite having all this wealth in LA, you can't provide it to the schools. And the union did manage to get an initiative on the 2020 ballot to reform Prop 13. This would raise taxes on commercial and industrial properties, which could raise as much as $11 billion a year, and boost state education funding by 6%. However, the leadership of the LA Unified School District has not endorsed this initiative, which seems very curious that a body that is interested and tasked with educating students wouldn't endorse a funding increase, an initiative that would lead to a funding increase. And I think some union spokespeople have kind of put into question how committed the superintendent is about standing strong against charter schools. He's been kind of cozying up to these charter school owners and proponents of charter schools, which isn't doesn't seem like the best position for a superintendent to take if he is in charge of educating both students who go to public schools and charter schools.
Also, this Nation article sort of discusses the work of UT LA, and there was a takeover by the sort of Union Power Caucus in 2014, and they've sort of been pushing on these issues over the past couple of years to sort of build the groundwork for this strike. And also, the article had some sort of interesting notes about, like, what are these charter schools sort of actually like? And there was one issue where, like, just they were describing this charter school as basically a Ferrari crashing into a tree multiple times, just because the teachers were getting just not really paid. I think it was only like $15,000 a year. Yeah. And they basically, they're paid $15,000 a year less than at neighboring schools. And there's a 40% turnover rate. They have to wait till the end of the year to find out if they can keep their jobs.
I guess the comparison there being that, like, the amount of money that is being spent on these charter schools relative to what you're actually getting out of them and how it could be spent better in other ways.
And it's taking money out of the funding pool for the actual public schools.
So what are some of the issues? I mean, you've mentioned some of them, obviously class sizes, especially is one of the, seems to be one of the key demands. But what are some of the other issues and what are the demands being made as part of this strike?
So a 6% raise for teachers is like one of the major things. The cost of living in LA has gone up 10%. So a teacher said he can identify 20 or so teachers just at a school who drive for Lyft or Uber on the side. And he said, even if that 6% raise comes, he's going to have effectively lost 10% of his wages just due to increases in the cost of living in LA. So that's huge. Something that is definitely on the forefront, especially talking about minimum wage, the fight for 15, just how much wages have stagnated for people, for working class people, while the cost of living has increased, and how we're effectively losing money just by staying at the same salary we've had for years and years.
And a lot of this also going back to some of the problems from the recession, which I think has been an issue raised in the strikes elsewhere that we've seen in other states, is just so many public employees and so much public spending got slashed after that last recession and never really restored, and it's continuing to have effects, right?
Yeah, correct. In the Nation article, a middle school teacher said, if you look at our teaching population between the ages of 27 to 32, there are no teachers because they were getting pink slipped every year during the financial crisis and the recession. So this teacher, Noriko Nakata, organized a 1-hour work stoppage and civil disobedience in protest of the cutbacks and funding that did occur during that time. And I think that moment really galvanized them, and they began to get serious about kind of reforming the union and forming that union power caucus that has now taken control.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because that's been also a theme in other places as well. In Chicago, in Massachusetts, I know that the Mass Teachers Association also got taken over by a similar caucus. Nate and I know some of those, the people who were involved with that. They're teachers that, or at least one teacher at our high school. And then of course we talked about earlier last year, about, you know, in West Virginia that, and I think maybe it was Arizona, if I remember correctly, that there was basically the actual sort of base membership taking power from the leadership that wasn't really active enough. So a similar theme playing out differently there, where, you know, the base membership is doing its own thing regardless of leadership. And I think you also have a note in here about how, you know, someone suggested that this might be a model for keeping public sector unions strong after Janus. So can you talk a little bit about that point, and also this sort of rise to power of the grassroots elements of these unions?
So like you said, the rank and file were very dissatisfied with how union leadership was organizing things. The Union Power Caucus was elected in 2014 on the promise to institute an organizing department, a political department, a research department, and a parent community division. And they even managed to get teachers to vote to increase their own union dues in order to make these things happen. So I think the fact that they were bargaining for the common good, which is the union idea of introducing demands and collective bargaining that benefit the community as a whole and not just the union's membership, kind of revitalizes unions and also reinvigorates interest in the public sector as a whole. I think this power building and the solidarity really means that when teachers take to the streets, they have parents willing not just to join them, but to take risks of their own, because they are seeing how much the union is working for the kids, and having that on the ground leadership of rank and file, where these teachers know the parents in the area, they know what the community's like, they can push information out to members and get a response from members about how people are feeling, getting information to parents, getting feedback from parents. It's because of the past few years of setting down systems and structures. And so I think having more of that horizontal organizational structure has really benefited them and really increased support in what the union is doing and accomplishing for the community.
So apparently there was 14.7 million spent in the last school board elections, which was through an attempt to take over the entire district with charter school supporters, which apparently has already happened in New Orleans. But then Nakata said that basically this attack like only galvanized the union to fight back. So she said, most of our teachers are good worker bees. They do what they're supposed to do. Then we had a superintendent who took a hammer or bat to the beehive of every school. So sort of now they're dealing with the result of that, and they have a lot of teachers picketing. So.
And also a group of charter schools did join the strike, Accelerated Schools. Teachers were walking off the job in only the second charter school strike ever. So I think that's very important, because these teachers are kind of joining in with the union strike, even though the union is calling for a cap on charters. They also aren't afraid to organize them. That's mentioned in the Nation article as well. So I think that's really incredible. The fact that these ununionized teachers see this cause as worth their time and participation. That's really quite inspiring, I think.
I think another thing that we need to think about or consider is sort of the role of the mayor in all this, Eric Garcetti. And since he doesn't actually have power over the school system, he's a guy with sort of more national aspirations, and it kind of seems like he's trying to mediate or get at least some good PR out of this in some way.
Well, and he is apparently trying to run for president. I think that should be noted in this context. I don't know why, but whatever.
He does not have a exploratory committee yet. Seems like everyone else does.
It'll be interesting to see how he kind of comes out of all this and how favorable he'll look. And I think a lot of that depends on how he organizes the concessions for the teachers. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be a great look for him if this doesn't get resolved well.
Or quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And he tries to run for president based on that. So.
Yeah. Something else I wanted to point out is just the inter-community organization and solidarity. So there was a Daily News article about how DSA members, International Socialist Organization members, have showed up to schools every day this week in support of the strike, about 100 to 150 members. Code Pink has had some people join in support. And I think that's something we haven't seen in the past. And I think it's very important, that community building, that that organization, and show of solidarity is very inspiring. And I think it I think we can scare some of the people in power with our organization and people building in this movement.
I thought from the article is kind of funny, where you have sort of these teachers who are not necessarily ideologists. So there's a quote here. It says, Venice High teachers said a few colleagues here and there expressed distaste for the far left ideology, but finding a critic of the supporters proved difficult. Certainly some aren't into it and many aren't politically engaged, said DSA member L.A. Ari Huber. But you'd be surprised how much interest he's heard from teachers joining the group. When I talk with the teacher and explain what DSA is about, democratic control of the economy, and you put it that way, they say, wow, that's really logical. And there are other groups as well. Los Angeles Alliance for New Economy, coalition partners of Reclaim Our Schools, and people are sort of getting together and forming coalitions and supporting the strikers. So it seems like that's happening. They're delivering tacos to the teachers, burritos, yeah, and all sorts of tasty food.
And I think something that's really important to note is that DSA is definitely there as a support role. Rudy Gonzalez said in this article, they don't come to our meetings and try to impose a strategy or ideology. We're trying to really work with everybody with a common vision of what we want our schools to be. A teacher said, the way I see it, they're out here. They're giving us support, and that's all that matters. We're appreciative. And I think
says
that
his wife also agreed, and he had a chorizo burrito in his hand.
Yeah. Good. So I think that's definitely a role for DSA, is just having, just being a coalition partner and just not trying to organize or take over, just be there to have the people there in support and just be visible and not try to impose any ideology or strategy on these disparate groups, but just try to be a beacon of solidarity.
Now, Nate, you wanted to talk about the strike happening in India, just as sort of a, I guess, frame of reference, point of comparison to some of the stuff we've been seeing in the U.S.?
Yeah, so it seems like there have been a couple of these strikes recently, but this recent one was quite possibly the largest strike in recorded history, beating a previous strike of about 180 million. It's hard to get obviously the numbers exactly. It could be anywhere 150 to, I've seen as high as 200 million people striking, so tough to know exactly, but it seems like there's a large amount of striking action going on. There's of course elections that are going to be coming up in, I believe, April, but yeah, there's just we've seen this a couple times before, just sort of several days long general strike where you have various trade unions or other unions tied to various Indian communist parties and other Congress party and other groups that are basically sitting on the tracks, no public transport, basically shutting everything down for a couple days. But basically the demands of the strike center around the deterioration, the livelihood of workers, and there could be new trade union laws that basically would lead to the enslavement of Indian workers. So they feel like this is a pretty critical junction where people need to start mobilizing.
And as you know, I mean, it's sort of maybe the largest strike ever because of the scale of mm-hmm. India. And, you know, there are many states in India that are larger than some of the largest countries in the world by population and by area. We're talking about absolutely just huge numbers of people, getting involved, and even still probably a relatively small percentage of the population. Rachel, your thoughts about the India strikes?
I'm not super familiar with Indian politics, but
got
yeah,
elections
it'll be interesting.
Coming up, I
yeah.
guess.
Yeah, yeah. With the election coming up, it'll be interesting to see if these organizers can kind of get more power and try to, I guess, stop Modi's worst anti-worker proposals.
Right. And like we've said, there have been 17 before this one, and it's only for a couple days. So the question is, can you transition that momentum into just sort of a longer strike, or, you know, build this into something that can actually put pressure on Modi.
And as Rachel alludes to, like, that is sort of the core pitch that Modi has made. I mean, he started out, you know, as this sort of like genocidal figure in politics and still represents this very far right wing, like, religious fanatical party and everything, but that his pitch is no, don't pay any attention to that. I'm an economic reformer who gets results. You know, I'm neoliberalizing the economy. I'm shaking things up, you know. And this is sort of pushing back on that.
Yeah. And that usually results in the death of the union. So it would make sense why the unions are now pushing back against this, because if the bill goes into effect, we could stuff to know exactly what happened, but I don't think it would be great for them. And also, we saw there's been some, and I don't know if the specifics of this law are all that similar to the one in Hungary, but there was a controversy over what was called the slave law up there, which basically meant employers could, like, force you to work for nothing, like, on extra time and stuff.
Yeah, and I think everyone would agree that neither in Hungary nor in India do workers need less bargaining power.
Right, yeah. And, you know, of course, in India, you have, like, thousands of farmers who commit suicide because of agrarian debt. And so all these sorts of things are coming together. So,
all right, well, Nate, thanks for being on the program again this week.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Rachel.
And Rachel, thanks, as always, for being here.
Thanks, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
That's all the time we have this week. Tweet us your comments at AFDRadio or email AFDRadio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Tuesdays. You can hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Tuesday at noon Eastern. Our theme music was composed for us by Stuntbird. If there are articles or papers discussed in an episode, we usually post links to them on ArsenalForDemocracy.com along with each episode. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message.